Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Episode 1 of Tasmanian Devil, a Unique and Threatened Animal by David Owen and David Pimbleton. It's a small book focusing on, and it has a map of Tasmania. So it's the Tasmanian Devil. So Tasmania is an island to the south of Australia. It's roughly triangular shaped. And it has above it two large islands on each of its apex. So it's a downward pointing triangle. The bottom of the triangle points towards Antarctica. And Hobart is closer to Antarctica than it is to Darwin, our northernmost city. And it has, it's roughly, so they've got the two islands up the top. So it looks like two little ears, a little face, and the top of the island is bowed down, and that has the Davenport, and down a large river called the Tamar River, Launceston, so that's a little bit inland. And then sprinkled in the side is a few lakes, which have all dammed to create hydropower in it. So Tasmania is hooked up to the mainland by undersea cable through Bass Strait. Bass Strait's a relatively shallow strait. It doesn't go, say, more than a kilometre down in depth. It goes, say, 200 metres down. So it used to be, there used to be a land bridge when the sea levels were lower. It's sealed itself off. And on the southern side of Tasmania, about a third of the way, or a quarter of the way up, or a quarter of the way, there's only a quarter of the distance down to the very southern tip, is Hobart. And Hobart's in this sort of very complicated bay system. There's a series of islands off Hobart, and there's a sort of a curved island which is actually connected by a thin peninsula. That's where Port Arthur is. Now off to the left of Tasmania really the left or west of Tasmania is very uninhabited. That's still wild. Of course, there, just reading that to you. Tasmanian Devil, and we're just going to read through it. I think we'll skip acknowledgements and read the introduction first, number one. Okay, the chapters start off. Oh, sorry, the chapters start. I'm eating a lie about here. The chapters start off with the title and a quote, and then goes into it. So let's read the quote to start off with. These days, I live on a small private nature reserve in the Tasmanian Highlands, where the whole family of wicked-looking, though lovable, black beasts regularly invite themselves to feast at my tent. Sometimes around midday, with the sun shining through their red ears, often in the dead of night, dressed as they are for darkness and cocktails. Some say Tassie devils are innately convicts, thieves and criminals, but I prefer to think of them as nature's creatures of fortune, as boisterous, inquisitive as children, who enjoy each other's companies, laugh at their own jokes, and share what they find. For what else would they have done with those five missing shoes, champagne bottles, and two billiard balls? By John Wilson Cuba. I don't know why that is. But that is very much the Tasmanian Devil. It's a small, little, black, jet-black, cat-like thing. A bit like a sort of a fast little bear, little ears at the top. We tend to put them, they're solitary animals, we tend to put them in pens together where they tend to scrap and fight and stuff like that. And they tend to steal stuff, just random stuff. They all decide to steal of everything, and they will hide it, but not do anything with it. Or they might keep it as a furnishing, but they won't do anything to it. Okay, Tasmanian Devil, a unique threatened animal, is a story of a wild animal, the world's largest living marsupial carnivore, about which we have limited understanding. Now there is a tragic possibility that it may become extinct in the wild, or extinct altogether, before we know know much more. Sadder still, human activity may be behind the mysterious disease that has decimated the species in the only place in the world where it still exists, the island of Tasmania. Just a few short years ago, it was unthinkable that the robust and protected Tasmanian devil might be about to follow the doom-laden footsteps of its larger relative, the thylacine. That's the Tasmanian tiger. A predator that was, in a large measure, rendered extinct by government-sanctioned persecutions. I think exclusively in my book. And this, the first comprehensive book on the Tasmanian devil, is a vibrant, sometimes horrifying, but remarkable story of our iconic marsupial animal and the great variety of people who have loved, loathed, and misunderstood it for centuries. And this is it here. There's not a massive amount of books on Australian animals. You have to actually really find one, and this one appears to be the book on the Tasmanian devil. And as you listen to it, so this is, you've heard of the koala and possibly the kangaroo, possibly the wallaby. This is a meat eater, marsupial meat eater. Marawa is a coastal township in the northeast of Tasmania. Late in the 20th century, a fifth generation Marawa farmer, Jeff King, elected to cease his 130-acre property using it for cattle farming. Instead, he turned it into a wildlife sanctuary, specifically to protect the Tasmanian devil. Much of King's run fronts wild, rocky coastline. A slow, bumpy ride through scrub takes visitors to his devil restaurant, a tiny old white wooden shack close to the surf and protected by extraordinary slabs of multi-hued granitine. That's a rock, I believe. The area is of strong Aboriginal significance and has an ethereal, otherworldly quality about it. Jeff King, as his visitors chat, eat and drink in a crude but comfortable little one-room shack. Outside, near the window, a spotlit wallaby carcass is staked on the ground. A microphone will alert the guests to the arrival of devils, as they generally turn up long after dance, hence the pleasure of socialising while waiting, briefly remote from civilisation. As often as not, it will be raining and blowing. So Tasmania is, the west coast is just, you've got the Southern Ocean, pounding for, you know, this is 5 meter waves just come crashing in. It's just unbelievable coastland of West Tasmania. You see the wave data for it. It's just astonishing. As often as not, it will be raining or blowing. The magnificent crunching of the devils, their black and white, sharp but transient interactions with another, half in, half out of man-made light as they go about their complex feeding business. It's a vivid and magical, like a sacred area itself, with the wind and the pounding surf as a constant background. The great tracts of Tasmania are unpopulated, with many areas inaccessible. The King experience provides a surprisingly close natural encounter with a rare animal that even today is wrongly assumed to be aggressive and antisocial, until recent devastation, a rural pest. To what extent can we come to know the true devil? As a voyage of devil discovery, this book attempts to answer the question. References are included to most devil literature, good and bad. The devil discoveries, opinions, experiences of experts and casual observers are contained within these pages. Prior to 1803, the year which Europeans settled in the island, what's happened is that there's a rebellion in the Rum Rebellion. So the colony is going for about 10 years. There's a Rum Rebellion, and so the government, you know, loyal people moved to Tasmania because that's they round the Cape first so they can get government provisions first. settled known as Van Diemen's Land. Van Diemen because the Dutch discovered Tasmania and New Zealand, and Fiji, and Captain Cook came in and filled a lot of lands, and, you know, they say discovered it. It's really the Dutch. There's no documented record of the interactions between those peoples and the hunter-scavenger carnivore, which was widespread across the island, as were 9 tribes, although archaeological records show humans and devils used the same cave systems as shelters. All that we have are a few phonetic recordings by early Europeans of the names they heard for devils by various tribes, including Tardibar, Palinur, and Palumerur. In the 2 centuries, it was the Tasmanians, they got rid of the devils, and then they got rid of all, there's only about 8,000 Aboriginals, they got exterminated them, or moved them off into missions. In the 2 centuries since, just a small number of individuals can be described as having been, as being true devil experts. Although the professional dedication to the animal over a substantial period, including much time in the field, they are the academic and the zoologist, Eric Guler, midwife officer, author, wildlife officer Nick Mooney, zoologist curator David Pembleton, who's an author of this book, marsupial specialist Mina Jones, and Tarawana Wildlife Park owner Andrew Kelly. And that's Andrew, A-N-D-R-O-O-Kelly. Probably Aboriginal, because we spoke about that. A larger, but still select group of people have had intimacy with the devils forced upon them, tragically, through the spread of devil facial tumour disease, DFTD, the disease that has been so killing the animals in increasing numbers since, since at least the mid-1990s. From the laboratory to the field, dozens of scientists, zoologists, veterans and specialists, volunteers and bureaucrats are combined in an effort to find a cause and a cure for the DFTD, a virulent facial cancer. So it's a virus, obviously. It's a cancer you can catch. It's a virus, which causes the greatest suffering, which kills within 5 months of its manifestation. So you've got a pretty amazing thing. A third category knows intimately a different kind of devil, namely those people who engage with the animal through the daily course of their professions. Tasmanian farmers have the longest unbroken relationship with the devil since European settlements, stretching about 200 years. And even today, their opinions range from respect to indifference to antagonism. Wildlife park operators are devil experts of another type, stripe. Because they own and nurture the animals in their care, whether captive born or bought into surviving dependents of roadkills, mothers. Mary Roberts, who operated, remember their pouched animals, so that you knock off a mother, you'll find inside the mother little babies. Mary Roberts, who operated the zoo in Hobart in the early 20th century, appreciated the devil like no one else before her. She holds an important place in the devil's story as the first person to study and write about them in detail. There are also academic experts. A number of postgraduate research students at the University of Sydney and elsewhere has grown sharply since the first doctoral thesis on the animal conferred in 1991. So there you go. And then there are those for whom the devil has been, or one day will be, a brief encounter. Only rarely are they seen by day in the wild, and hence the attraction to the state's increasing number of wildlife parks, which inevitably have devils as a star attraction. To observe 3 or 4 in a wildlife park enclosure is a highly controlled experience, but even so, whether dozing, sunbaking, splashing in the water, chasing one another for competitive bolts of food at mealtimes, they are the real thing, almost within touching distance. The devil's restricted habitat, the absence of devils in overseas zoos and zoos, Tasmania's geographical or remoteness, the island is closer to Antarctica than to Darwin, mean that very few people have seen the live Tasmanian devil, far fewer in the wild. That goes for platypuses. I had my first platypus encounter. So platypus is a monitoring, absolutely an egg-laying animal. Fur-covered, egg-laying owl. Very interesting. And to see it was just such a shudder. Okay. By contrast, Warner Brothers cartoon character Taz the Tasmanian Devil, a whirling, brown, slobbering creature, has vast international recognition. This compelling paradox is an integral part of the story. Unfortunately, for many Australians, the devil is no more than a two-dimensional symbol of the island's identity, even though it has been extinct on the mainland for less than 500 years. Like the Thylacine, which is the Tasmanian tiger, the devil's abstracted image has become overwhelming, reducing and belittling the importance of the animal itself. This book gets as close as possible to get to the Tasmanian devil. It is written with great respect for the animal, which until recently seemed to represent a tremendous evolutionary success story in an ancient continent in a harsh environment. Yet the disease so gravely afflicting the species indicates that, far from being a robust carnivore with no predator species to fear, it is a highly vulnerable and a stark reminder of how limited our understanding of this unpredictable natural world. Most difficult of all to describe is the evolutionary fitness of the Tasmanian devil, its success as a species. On the one hand, it has flourished for tens of thousands of years through its island home, yet that is a result of a negative evolutionary outcome, its range shrinking from all parts of the continent until, okay, so it was all ubiquitous, until remnant populations died out in Victoria. Furthermore, island carnivores are among the most vulnerable of the isolated species. But the disease has shown us a glimpse of a remarkable devil behaviour. Evidence has emerged that, in response to the decimation of the number, devils have tended to become semilparlous, males breeding when much younger, so taking the place of older males, dying while still in their mating prime. But, as a result, they themselves dying after their first and only litter is weaned. Previously, seen only in mammals in related the anti-China, so this is the male that mates and dies. This is anti-China, so it's a famous little mouse, and it's, oh, go male, and it just mates so hard that the exhaustion of mating kills the male. Okay, anticarnis, and the possibility of quarrels, it appears to be a natural response to prevent the reproductive cycle from being fatally broken. Okay, so the males get in and mate, and then they die. In human terms, we might salute this as acts of supreme self-sacrifice for a greater good. And there is another aspect of the devil's behaviour operating in its favour. Time after time, field biologists dealing with sick and dying devils report tenacious individual will to survive, including emaciated, cancer-ridden mothers weaning to a point, or breastfeeding to a point of death. Tasmanian devils don't give up. That's written in 2005. I think the Tasmanian devil story is turning a corner. I think it's still lingering. It's a dreadful disease. Beelzebub's pup, a reappraisal of the Tasmanian devil. So Beelzebub is the name for the devil. The scary name, Beelzebub. You know, Beelzebub, you actually think of someone loping around doing devilish things. Over the years, this is the quote to start, over the years it got to be a war between Dawn and the devils as the stones, wires and other defences around the house foundations got bigger and bigger. Okay, so just to tell you, they live in the bush, but if you clear the bush, the devils have nowhere to go but inside underneath your house, and the stones and wires would be doing it. For many years, however, the devils won. The growling would be heard on the inspection next morning. They had dug their way through the stones and rocks to get back to their nest. Now, I must admit, I did a similar thing for a possum. There's a possum in our chimney, and I put some plastic wire over the top of our chimney so we could still use it. A grill, stop it. And at night, these possums went absolutely terrifying. I can't describe how angry they were. It was just like, was these devils, they're just going, and they ripped, got through it. So eventually I got up there in the light. So you have to wait. You can't put a slab on the chimney in the daytime because the possums are inside. You have to wait for them to get out, and then you put the slab. So there I was in the twilight, the possums had come out, and there's a rosy moonlight lit behind me, and I was up on this rope heaving like Quasimodo a rock there, and the neighbours were going, well, WTF, what's going on? But let's read what happens to this Dawn. Some nights, the noise from the devils were amazing. Dawn had a big stick and would bang it on the lounge room floor to quiet them down. Because at night, it's pretty amazing. They're quite cute, I think. Good stories, no matter how unlike, share a tried and tested formula. Intriguing setting, protagonist, a good guy. Antagonist, a bad guy. A plot strength through mystery, drama. Gee whiz, I wish I could have all this. drama, action, climate, and resolution. Okay, this is obviously going to go somewhere, isn't it? In 1863, Morton Alpott, a respected Hobart solicitor and naturalist, wrote a letter to his son Cuzon describing a trip he had undertaken with a companion into the Tasmanian Alpine wilderness. An incidental paragraph of the letter exactly covers this formula with a small, slightly slanted writing. Before leaving Bivouac Beach setting, Packer, the good guy, was considerably scared drama at meeting action, what he had called Beelzebub's pub mystery. In other words, the Tasmanian devil, the bad guy, near the camp, but it made off resolution before the gun was ready, climax suspended. Well, that's what people tended to... In Australia, there's some shooters which can just pick up a gun and just drop something dead at an enormous meeting. Meters. And this is not in general. Okay. And this is rather good. The Tasmanian Devil is a remarkable... the story of the Tasmanian Devil is a remarkable one. Surprising, controversial, funny, tragic. Nor has it been told before. Yeah, this is an interesting thing. Few animals have been so negatively named in 1803 when a ragged boatload of English officers, sailors and convicts settled on the banks of the Derwent River. Deep in the south of Tasmania, they wrongly assumed the island to be a physical extension of the coast of New Holland, because people didn't go to Australia, they went to New Holland. Australia was an invention afterwards when they thought, we want to be really British, we won't call it New Holland. And of course, they initially didn't discover Bass Strait, they kept on sailing past it. The name at the time for the Australian mainland, their mistake was understandable, for this new place... where familiar eucalypt trees, kangaroos, wallabies and parrots. The devil, however, had been extinct to the mainland for centuries, and so its vocalizations were unknown to the newcomers. Lying in their tents at night, listened nervously to the beast's alien shrieks and screams emanating from densely wooded mountains and valleys. A case can be made that the settlers heard the devils before seeing them, since the animals are nocturnal and rarely about during the day. Why christen these small living scavengers after the supreme embodiment of evil? On the other hand, there is something practical about the name. Beelzebub was Satan's first lieutenant, the prince of devils, the lord of flies, carcasses and flies, and Tasmanian devils have a lot in common. Early written reports of the animals condemned it to persecution. It was incorrectly, though perhaps understandably, described as untamely savage, highly destructive to livestock with such a fierce bite that ordinary-sized dogs were no match for it. How to classify such a creature? Devil had an array of taxonomic names, including the scary Sarcophilus satanicus, means satanic meat lover, the Diabolicus Uranus, the diabolical bear, and most commonly accepted the Sarcophilus harrisi, after the named after the Deputy Surveyor General George Harris, who in 1806 described and sketched the devil for the London Zoological Society. But some scientists have in recent times opted for the S. Lanancarus, after the mainland fossil named in the 1830s by the French naturalist George Cuvier. Cuvier was in Australia. So he was a very, very famous person. I don't know whether he came to Australia. But and Geoffrey St. Hilaire, and the English paleontologist Richard Owen. So these are all superstars. Cuvier was the person who took over from Lamarck, and Hilaire, he was the thing for gradualism. I don't quite understand it. He had, not gradualism, Cuvier had that new species come about by new acts of creation coming across. To add to the uncertainty, there was also the S. moranus, an even earlier mainland fossil, as well as another possible species nestled in the time and size between S. moranus and the extant species. On the other hand, in good Australian vernacular, the devil might well be called the pied jumbuck gobbler. Jumbuck means sheep in Australia. Jumbuck, he's a jolly jumbuck. Pied means it's got coloured. It's got white spots. So these look like James Bond These little things look like they look at you, and they've got a really ugly face, but they look as though they're wearing a tuxedo, much more like penguins, you know, penguins do. And it is Galampendorus woolly turdy. Okay, in 1830, the devil was singled out along with the thylacine as a stock-destroying vermin to be eliminated through bounty schemes. Yet neither of these species was to blame for livestock losses, as shown by 80 years of bounty records painstakingly collected by Eric Gulliam. The real culprits in the hard early years of the colony of Van Diemen's Land were poor management decisions and practices and large packs of feral dogs. And it we've also got feral dogs here, and the wildlife park, wildlife people are just, they sort of leave them a little bit. If they kill them, they photograph them first, they know them by name before they take them out. It has to be said that the sight of a few devils tearing into a carcass of a sheep or a sick lamb does leave a strong impression. And what of Packer's fear of Bivouac Beach? It's true that devils will eat people, but only cadavers, and only if the opportunity is there. Such a finding, a suicide or a murder victim in the bush. Tasmanian Police Forensic Service invariably call Nature Conservation Branch officers Nick Nooney and Mark Holdsworth on such occasions. There are, needless to say, Tasmanian devils bush myths, such as a couple hiking in the wilderness. One slips and becomes trapped under a fallen log. The other goes to get help, returns the next morning, and only a femur, bones and a boot are left. In another, a drunk falls into a cattle trough and drowns with his arm hanging out, which gets eaten off. But an element of caution is probably not a bad thing. Alan Scott, the manager of the Cameron family farm, Kingston, at the foot of Ben Lomond, so this is a mountain, they gave it, they reimagined Tasmania is Scotland, didn't they? You know, there's drawings of Tasmania with all these mythical places in it. They got the outline and they hadn't explored it, so they just packed it full of stuff. Describes his property sprawling and being in the middle of nowhere. The late Major R. Cameron swore that in 1998 he saw a pair of thylacines on his properties. There you go. Scott says the disease that struck hard in the region, that it was terrible to no longer have living devils in the place. Yet, when he first began working on the property many years ago, he was required to go do lone mustering on horseback in remote paddocks, back paddocks. He feared the prospect of taking fall or being incapacitated far from help, with night coming on. Indeed, Mooney says he has come across this fear many times. This is the, Mooney is the, so let's do the, Cameron is the person, Alan Scott, various things like that. Mooney is the ranger. Devils are opportunistic feeders, not specialist predators. They eat a variety of foods. They do not kill by play. They forage for carrion, both vertebrate and invertebrate. While there are a few unsubstantiated reports of operative hunting, with one devil flushing prey and the other chasing it down, the animal is overwhelmingly a solitary hunter. The devils who seek stealth and ability to run quickly in short spurts makes it a good night hunter, with wombats favoured as their fat content and their relative slowness, so they do kill wombats. The devil is incapable of running down a bounding wallaby or a sprinting rabbit. Its jaw strength and teeth have evolved to consume carrion, including tough gristles, skin, and large bones. Technically, a sick lamb or wallaby is near to death and a devil begins to eat it. That is an act of predation, not foraging. Okay, right. It's a technical. Despite the devil having no role in bringing its prey to its state. It is also technically correct to state the devils hunt tadpoles and moths, both of which feature in their diets. If a devil opportunistically scents a nest of helpless baby quolls, native hens, yeah, so there are native chickens around the place, wombats, indeed devils, and indeed little baby devils, and consumes them, that predation, although the behaviour is associated with the act of foraging. So that's basically important point. They're not out for the hunt, they're out to forage, and if they find something there. And the quoll is basically the native marsupial cat. And a quoll leaves cats for... Well, cats are awful, but the quoll is a voracious killer. A quoll, they look cute, they're spotted, but they will go in and they will kill just, well, up for fun, and they tend to kill things and drink their blood. That will kill and get the most food possible. What the devil is not, that the devil is not selective or timid eater is amply borne out. It is, and not just by the antics of its tree and rock chomping cartoon counterpart, which Warner Brothers brought to life in 1954 when there was hardly any available literature on devil behaviour. It seems that shoes regularly disappear off verandas of beach shacks and, if ever found again, have been well chewed. Devils love scavenging around rubbish dumps, but so do other opportunistic carnivores such as spotted-tailed quolls, cats, bears, hyenas and foxes. I don't believe we have any actual bears in Australia. I don't understand. This is... we don't have hyenas and foxes, so we don't have always hyenas. This is that bears go to rubbish dumps in other countries. Devils frequent beaches in search of dead fish and much else potentially edible deposited on the tide line. I must admit, seeing wildlife like kangaroos on the beach is just the most thrilling thing. Wallabies, if it's in a koala on a beach. But seeing a devil on the beach would be great. On one occasion, at Jeff King's Devil Restaurant during the day, Nick Mooney, which is our wildlife officer, watched newly independent devils fossicking for and eating kelp maggots. Wow. David Randall, who worked as a ranger for many years in all parts of Tasmania, studied the native water rats of Freshnet Peninsula. So Freshnet is the French after Napoleon sent so Australia was like the moon, and there was a race, and the French Freshnet, the beautiful French scientific ships, just beautiful. One morning he found a sprung trap that the devil had subsequently broken into, forcing the wire apart to get at the bait and whatever creature was in there. So he's strapping for water rats, and the devil says, "Oh, I'm going to eat that water rat." Gary Sutton, a ranger in charge of Narapatu National Park in northern Tasmania, once had to shoot an injured horse in the park. Because of the size of the park, public role, he used a front-end loader to dig a deep hole and bury the animal. Devils soon dug tunnels down through the sand to the decomposing corpse. One of Alan Scott's cows, this is the person who's got that farm in the middle of nowhere, died giving birth. He left the corpse overnight and returned the next morning to see devils coming out the backside. That's not unusual. The easiest way into an animal is through the soft parts. And there you've got hagfish. If you are dead on the bottom of the sea, they get in and eat you from the inside by entering your anus. They go straight for the anus of a whale. And Gullier reported that he and his colleagues found three devils sleeping off their feet inside the ribcage of a cow they were consuming. The observed record of devils feeding simultaneously, also on a cow, is 22. It's a remarkable behavioural aspect. It's a generally solitary animal. It's also misunderstood behaviour, and is one of the reasons why devils have had such a bad reputation. Far from being a free-for-all, communal devil feeding is structured and purposeful, and is properly described as a ritualised behaviour. The screaming and apparent fighting is an elaborate combination of a variety of vocalisation and postures which orders maintain. The noise acts as a compass at night, alerting the devils to the area. Just as daylight circling vultures attract others, which saves them from wasting energy looking for food. Smaller carcasses equal less noise. Perceived practice of eating everything because it disappears, is a result of individuals taking what they can and hiding their share to consume it in peace. So they dismember the carcass and remove it. It's not that they eat everything. So if you died, these Tasmanian devils would come and rip you asunder and just sprinkle you everywhere. And you might leave a bit of a hand or a finger thing and leak through. Devils are the greatest hygienists in the Tasmanian bush and long ago extended that courtesy to farmers eating their dead and sick livestock, in the process breaking the sheep tapeworm cycle, keeping the blowfly population down and relieving conscientious landowner of the need to bury their dead stock. For these reasons, there have been proposals to introduce devils to the Flinders Islands and King Islands, where the roadkill wildlife smells and is unsightly, attracting adverse reactions to tourists. Now, this is one of the things that we should say. There was a relative who didn't want to visit Tasmania because she didn't want to drive around and see roadkill. She just was an animal lover. But that's one thing you don't see in... You see the sort of kangaroos in Australia having a sleep by the side of the road, but you don't see it in Tasmania. One of the problems, and attracting adverse reaction from tourists. One of the problems with the proposal is the same danger would be posed to devils feeding on the roadside, speeding cars. Our solution would be to heave roadkill into the bush, where it can be consumed safely. Devil researcher Mina Jones and her volunteers did this along a road at Coles Bay at Freshnet Peninsula almost every night during the years I have worked there. The number of devils killed by cars decreased dramatically. Well, there you go, devils wouldn't be out there. Now, the Freshnet Peninsula is on the east coast. I'd love to visit there. Communal feeding gives rise to the apparent paradox that this asocial animal is indulgent in close, complex social ritual and as often as off every third or fourth night. David Parra, an internationally renowned filmmaker, especially in wildlife documentaries, has spent many years filming and observing devils and is well aware of the social nature of the species. Quote, "We think them as a bad-tempered and vicious, but watch them in the den and their family lives are not unlike human life. They as playtime, squabbles, dinner time, discipline problems, teaching and learning. Our Tasmanian devil is dangerous. Of the many people working closely with devils, biologists, orphan carers, this is orphan devils, wildlife and park employees, few would disagree that although the individual animals are generally greatly varying personalities, the species as a whole is timid. A wild devil trapped in a cage, though through not a painful leg hole trap or snare, will freeze or become inert and won't struggle if carefully handled. Quolls, by contrast, bolt as soon as they can. Opossums are notoriously difficult to handle. Guglia experimented empirically by putting devils and rats together in a small enclosure. The devils, he reported, were at times wary of the scurrying rats. If anyone knew them, Gullis said, quote, most of the more than 7,000 Tasmanian devils his handles were docile to the point of being lethargic and could be handled with ease. On the other hand, devil's rage, though rare, is real. Early in 2005, two wildlife volunteers released a newly weaned devil from the trap. It turned and chased them so aggressively they had to leap into the car. Devils can often be seen chasing one another in the wildlife park enclosures, and the same behaviour occurs in the wild during feeding bouts. Devils scare easily and when startled will often shake. Screeching and biting devils acting purely out of fear will, however, if held firmly, become very still. And they are sensitive. In 2004, David Pembleton and his family and Nick and Kate Mooney hand-reared devils whose mothers had died from DFTD, devil facial tumour disease. Pembleton visited the Mooney, so they know each other. This is the author, and Mooney is the wildlife officer. One Saturday, after which, said Nick, their devil, Eric, quote, a characteristic charmer with a short fuse, came in behaving normally until Cake fired up the vacuum cleaner. He changed completely and remained 100% timid for days, hiding in dark corners. I suspect the combination of lingering smells of David's devils on his clothes and the size of the noise of the cleaner may have told him that a large dominant devil had entered the house. Let's see. Well, that's nice. Going on like this and keeps on going. Timid and sensitive yet the popular imagination of the devil has always been considered quite the opposite, as in this ludicrous 1917 description. So this is wrong. Curiosity having been aroused as to why the ugly things received their highly suggestive names, it was stated that there can be little doubt that they deserved it. It is another case of ugliness going to the bone. Indeed, any virtues they possess are negative ones, and their vices are their most positive. They are very savage and frequently fight amongst themselves, while they slay other creatures for the mere wanton lust of slaughter. Oh dear. When they attack anything, a member of their own tribe or another species, they will practically tear it to pieces in sheer ruthlessness. During the day, it is too sleepy to be otherwise than very stupid. With the oncoming of covering of darkness, it displays a cunning and cleverness inseparably connected to its human mind with the original owners of the despised name of the devil. Well, there you go. But I must admit, there's lots of books from that era, 1913. I read a 1913 cookbook, and it's just, you know, about how the ladies should wear gloves and how you, when you're cooking chickens at the market, you check for the wrinkles on the chicken's feet. Yeah, there's all these things that are lost by these books. Or this is another book from 1970. I'm just eaten alive by mosquitoes at the moment. Or this, the Tasmanian Devil, the Sarcophagus Uranus, the dreadful bear, has a reputation of being the fiercest, most wantonly destructive beast in the animal kingdom. It's ugly and morose, a small animal, black with a white front on its throat, is capable of doing enormous damage to sheep, killing wantonly sometimes large numbers of flocks. Dear. Fortunately for the Tasmanian farmer, it's, if not for natural history, the number of devils are decreasing rapidly. No less, a scientist, Clive Lord, an eminent director of Tasmanian Museum and Art Gallery, described the devil as exceedingly quarrelsome and later fiercely opposition. It cannot be considered a pleasant animal to have much to do with. Let's see. Yep. Devils were presumed to be scarce when Lord wrote about them. And, if they were, it is possible that he had relied on scantily based rural accounts for his observations, because he was wrong on all three accounts. Mistakes are up to a point when, in 1962, a London newspaper ran a feature on London Tasmanian devils, accompanying them with a photograph of thylacine. The editor received 14 complaints. Less figurable is a popular American animal encyclopedia, which even in its sixth printing in 1988, and so well, thank goodness encyclopedias are going away. There was encyclopedias being thrown out by the local library, and I wanted to keep them. I just so wanted to keep the library, but they've always been chucked out. The Tasmanian devil is a jet black with white blotches and bright pink nose, ears, feet, and tail. The devil is a burrower, but when cornered, will often dive into the water and swim a long distance before surfacing under the banks or overhanging vegetations. Sounds as though it's a pop noise. It's a combination of a platypus and a kindergarten painting which takes some bear beating. There you go. It's got a platypus. They've mixed it up with a platypus, but it's enough to just stuff in an encyclopedia. Equally improbable is the link between the Tasmanian devil, supposedly, with the enduring American myth of the Jersey Devil. Now, I've heard this is Americans getting a bigger, dumber myth than anybody ever. This creature allegedly came to exist in the 18th century in the swamp of southeastern New Jersey, having a horse-like head, wings, cloven feet, and a thick tail. And that's dumb as you've come. Sightings were regular, including one by Napoleon Bonaparte's brother Joseph, while hunting there. Joseph lived in America between 1815 and 1832, and it was even I wonder if he's Napoleon the Third, and it's even seen in the company of a headless pirate. Joseph Bonaparte may have known of a strange new devil animal because his sister-in-law, Empress Josephine, kept a menagerie that included marsupials. Yeah, so the French exhibition, Napoleon's French exhibition to Australia, collected heaps of animals, and this Malmaison had kangaroos thumping around it in the 18-something-something. During 1 week in 1909, some 30 sightings of the Jersey Devils caused near panic. Smithsonian Institute speculated that it may be a Jurassic survivor, possibly a pterodactyl, or a plesiosaurus, which had survived the region's limestone caves. More plausible, if that was a word, was that the New York scientists thought it might be a marsupial carnivore. But confusion arising out of the words and myth pales besides the reality of on the ground. The Tasmanian devils have been mercilessly persecuted. 19th century bounty hunting gave way to widespread strychnine poisoning in the early and middle decades of the 20th century, with baits laid by farmers and also trappers to make a living for the possums and wallaby pelts. Yeah, so if you're wanting to shoot possums and wallabies, Tasmanian devils, you're competing with Tasmanian devils who will get them. So if you trap, they'll eat the stuff in the trap. Okay. Snaring was a substantial business in 1923 season, which, is the Great Depression in Australia, for instance. Over 500,000 possums were snared and half that number of wallabies. Yet spotted-tailed quolls probably damaged more snare animals than the devils did because they had a great ability to reach the carcass suspended above the ground. So, yeah, the quolls are like cats. They can jump high. They're like acrobats. I just can't describe a quoll. So if I have a quoll and fencing, a large fence, it will just leap. I don't know how it does it. It just can go up. And so what you snare, what will happen is the wallaby will go and the snare will lift the wallaby up above the ground. Okay. Likewise, poorly attached chicken wire won't protect poultry from hungry devils. But their disappearance from many rural areas has not meant the hens are now safe. Max Cameron, the owner of Kingston, bought 12 hens in a newly property near Tarrinum and put them in a sealed room overnight. A quoll got into the room through the drain and nicked, killed, and blood-sucked all of them. So it just the quoll is truly the lightning fastest killer. So it will get into your hens and just kill everything. It'll just go through and just kill everything. And in this case, it says it sucked the blood. I've heard that before. Yet the Tasmanian devil has been an easy target for so long, like that of the ethereal Jersey devil flying through the mists of the densely wooded swamps. Truth and reality are secondary to established myth. There you go. Zombie myths. This is like folk knowledge. It's not the knowledge falls out. It's just the people who believe in the social structure of it. Devils can stink if they have been trapped in a cage or extended period and their coats become matted with excrement. Adults have a natural musty waxy odour, but young devils are clean smelling as puppies and kittens. The perception that the animals stink because they eat rotting meat is incorrect and reflects the lack of first-hand experience. Yeah, geez, it's really interesting. Their famed jaw strength is very real, the equivalent to that of a dog four times their size, or for their body mass, and more powerful than a tiger. The early steel trap wires used by Guglia proved useless. I think Guglia, yeah. Since some adult devils were able to chew their way through the thick wire. When trapping devils in the 1950s, naturalist David Frehley was astounded to find that devils wearing a glistening yellow metal collar, until he recalled that 2 weeks previously a special composite foot snare of brass and hemp set for the thylacine had been found sprung and bitten off. Oh, okay. Even so, devils are incapable of chewing through the bigger bones of large animals, and are incapable. And tough hide is very difficult to chew and ingest. While wombat's flesh is prized and prized far, and the prized far is devoured, devils generally leave the backbone and the adjoining skin of the rugged herbivore. So if you can imagine, a wombat is thick. They are scary. They're thick, heavy. Like a wombat is basically as big as a person crouched down. They're pretty strange things. The devil's range of vocalization is truly impressive. There are at least 11 distinct vocalizations, but describing them isn't easy. Writing in 1806, Harris described a sudden kind of snorting. 150 years later, Finlay heard that sound as a wheezing cough that sounded harshly like horrors, while excitable reminiscence from Melbourne Zoo's correspondence. If one could imagine a choir consisting of imps in the infernal regions, with every ear-splitting, brain-screeching sound grouped in hideous discords, the only earthly model that could be used as a guide would be the chorus from a company of Tasmanian devils. Okay, well, I'm going to have to stop here because the light has faded, and I have been reading for 52 minutes, which is great. And I'm on page 21, and in this chapter alone, it just goes on. Oh, chapter 2, so it's chapter 1, and just reread what this is. It's Beelzebub's pub, just an introduction to the devil. Okay, and I'm not going to be able to read chapter 2. Starts at page 30. I've got another 8 pages to read, or 10 pages to read, so I'll stop there and broadcast this.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.